I've been waiting for something to happen, for a week or a month or a year, with the blood in the ink of the headlines and the sound of the crowd in my ear. You might ask what it takes to remember when you know that you've seen it before, where a government lies to a people and a country is drifting to war. There's a shadow on the faces of the men who sent the guns to the wars that are fought in places where their business interest runs. On the radio, talk shows, and the TV, you hear one thing again and again: how the USA stands for freedom, and we come to the aid of a friend. But who are the ones that we call our friends? These governments killing their own, or the people who finally can't take anymore, and they pick up a gun or a brick or a stone. And there are lives in the balance.
As I put on my makeup, I see a dent. Yes, a literal dent in my forehead. I'm puzzled, and then I realize months of N95 masks. I look down at my hands. They're so worn, old-looking. I think of my dreams, all the death in the past year. More than a career for most. I recall being told I had to take the flu vaccine or I was fired, giving in because I couldn't lose my job, but that feeling of not being able to breathe after a severe allergic reaction is in the back of my mind. But the facts are this. This is America. We have a choice, or we are supposed to. Don't anyone lecture me on COVID. Don't you dare. If you've worked in it, I'll listen. But if you've not seen it firsthand, then I respectfully decline your advice. I'm not anti-vax, never have been, but let's not pretend this is the same type vaccine as a flu shot or others. It is one of a kind. It is new. No long-term studies. Don't tell me I'm not educated. I can assure you I am. However, when people post things about people being ignorant for not taking it, maybe they've done their own research. There are many, many educated people that are ignorant. It should be a personal choice. If you want to take it, go for it. If you don't, that should be okay as well. But how dare anyone force healthcare workers to take it? After the trauma, the death, depression, and the things we've dealt with for the past year, you sit at desks and cite literature, numbers, statistics, doctor the results. You try to require people to blindly follow and trust you. And most of you making the rules have never laid one finger on a COVID patient, let alone code them for hours, clean them up after death, be the only people they see or talk to for days. How dare you put on the news that people vaccinated aren't getting sick or dying? That's a lie. And the problem is that the nurses and healthcare workers know that. The general public, for some reason, believe the news and the social media. Let me be clear. I'm not against the vaccine. I just think it is a personal choice. And from the perspective of someone forced to take a vaccine in the past and spending a week in ICU from it, it is a choice. We all deserve the freedom to make that choice. Respectfully, Lisa Mathis, FNP. I just read this less than 3 minutes before going on the air. I knew that I had to share this to open the program with tonight. Lisa is one of my co-members of a new Facebook group entitled, it's called Healthcare Heroes for Freedom. And this was posted some 3 hours ago. And I came in and stated this will be shared on my broadcast within minutes. God bless you, Lisa Mathis. I agree with 98% of what she had to say. Some parts I don't. But isn't that what life is supposed to be about? Good evening. Welcome to The Edge of Darkness. I'm your commentator for the next hour, Jeffrey Bennett. Glad to have you here. Interesting stuff. I know I talk about Facebook a lot. And since I was invited to join this group, I am spending far more time at Facebook interacting with a lot of these people, posting some pieces occasionally that take folks aback. I have found things coming from other medical professionals and doctors who are refusing to take the vaccine. And most of the work is being done by nurses. It is, my friends, more than profound. It's shocking. I guess, and I have to be honest, I finished the program last night, and although it was not a particularly stressful program, by 7 o'clock, an hour later, I was so wiped out, I tried to go to sleep. I went through one of the worst nights last night that I've had in a long, long time. I am amazingly stressed with all of this, these things that I've been talking about now for so long. In some respects, I believe that this could be my last and biggest and possibly greatest battle. It's not ending, people. And yet it's important that we stop the fear-mongering. There's a doctor from Johns Hopkins who's shredded the latest COVID madness being peddled by the CDC and Dr. Faust. But keep in mind, fear is contagious. Almost as bad, maybe even worse than the Delta variant. Again, is the new variant more transmissible? Yes. Is it deadlier? No. Does it make you sicker? No. Are those being impacted primarily the unvaccinated? Most definitely. So when you want to increase vaccination rates, the government did what it does best. Screws things up. Because now fully vaccinated people must now wear masks again in high case areas. What constitutes a highly infectious area? That's decidedly not clear yet. But I'm sure the CDC and Fauci will make up some science fiction to justify this new mask mandate. Oh, don't kid yourself. The mandates are coming too. Not nationwide. Biden can't really do that until the midterms, but I don't suspect he'll be in office by then anyway. But you see, federal agencies are one by one mandating it for their own workers who risk the loss of pay or their jobs if they refuse. Get vaccinated, but also continue to live in fear. Yeah, no wonder. No wonder why hesitancy is through the roof. All this move does is make the vaccine hesitant dig in further and give anti-vaxxers all the ammunition they need to chip away at the credibility of the vaccines. You can't be mad at the latter group when those who want us to get vaccinated offer all the ammunition to shoot that narrative down, or at the very least question it. Oh, so heavily. Well, maybe we take a break from being mad. Listen to the words of Johns Hopkins doctor, Dr. Marty Makary. And he wrote the following about new studies about natural immunity, which is ignored by Fauci and company. He also rehashed an old Fauci statistic that shreds the current push for new mask protocols and possible lockdowns. The news about the U.S. COVID pandemic is even better than you've heard. Some 80 to 85% of American adults are immune to the virus. More than 64% have received at least one vaccine dose, and those who haven't, roughly half have natural immunity from prior infection. And there's ample scientific evidence that natural immunity is effective and durable, and public health leaders should pay it heed. then only about 10% of Americans have had confirmed positive COVID tests, but 4 to 6 times as many have likely had the infection. A February study in Nature, that's a publication, used antibody screenings in late summer 2020 to estimate that there had been 7 times as many actual cases as those that had been confirmed. A similar study by the University of Albany and New York State Department of Health revealed that by the end of March 2020, the first month of New York's pandemic, 23% of the city's population had antibodies, and that share necessarily increased as the pandemic spread. Now, natural immunity is durable. Researchers from Washington University in St. Louis reported last month that 11 months after a mild infection, immune cells were still capable of producing protective antibodies. And the authors concluded that prior COVID infection induces a robust and long-lived humoral immense response, which led some scientists to suggest that natural immunity is probably lifelong. And because infection began months earlier than vaccination, we have more follow-up data on the duration of natural immunity than on vaccinated immunity. Skeptics of natural immunity point, of course, to Manaus, the capital of the Brazilian state of the Amazonas, where reports in January suggested a wave of reinfections despite herd immunity. But the initial estimate of those infected was incorrect because it was based on antibody testing among those who donated convalescent plasma, an unrepresentative subgroup of the population. And then a follow-up study debunked the reinfection hypothesis and found only 3 confirmed reinfections in the entire state, whose population exceeds 4 million people. 3 confirmed reinfections out of 4 million. And other studies have confirmed that reinfections are rare, usually asymptomatic or mild. But some health officials warn of possible variants resistant to natural immunity. But none of the hundreds of variants observed so far have evaded either natural or vaccinated immunity with the 3 vaccines authorized in this country. Of course, if you really want to get technical, they're not vaccines. A vaccine, by legal definition, is something that's been approved, which this stuff hasn't been. It's still all going through testing. So the question is, should the previously infected be vaccinated? Our doctor's clinical advice to healthy patients with natural immunity is that one shot is sufficient and maybe not even necessary, although it could increase the long-term durability of immunity. A University of Pennsylvania study of people previously infected with COVID found that a single vaccine dose triggered a strong immune response with no increase in that response after the second dose. A separate study from New York's Mount Sinai School of Medicine concluded that the antibody response to the first vaccine dose in individuals with pre-existing immunity is equal to or even exceeds the titers found in naive, never infected individuals after the second dose. And yet Dr. Fauci said last August 13th that when you have fewer than 10 cases per 100,000, you should be able to open up safely and clearly. The U.S. reached that point in mid-May. It's time to stop the fear-mongering and level with the public about the incredible capabilities of both modern medical research and the human body's immune system. Now, you've got to admit that this is a breath of fresh air, right? But sadly, Dr. Makary is sidelined on most networks in favor of pro-lockdown and pandemonium experts who are peddling an agenda where we may never be allowed to go outside again. And this is the cost of the COVID-zero approach. Everything can get you, so just live inside, which ironically is where the virus thrives. Most cases are from household spread, not gymnasiums or restaurants or bars or hair salons or barbershops. For those who've recovered from COVID, Makary said his clinical advice to healthy patients with natural immunity is that one shot is sufficient and maybe not even necessary, although it could increase the long-term durability of immunity. If the government wants to boost vaccine rates, then all attention should be focused on proper science-based messaging to convince the unvaccinated. But you cannot do that when you fear-monger or shame or offer contradictory advice. The vaccinated should be viewed as an example of what awaits, which is a return to normalcy, except for one problem. Many of those who have been vaccinated have gone through some other negative responses, some death. But you're supposed to believe, get the shot, but still mask up and remain in the bunker? This kind of mentality gives no incentive whatsoever to those on the fence. It doesn't take a scientist to know why vaccination rates have stalled. It's the experts' continued failure to message about the vaccine properly since they decided to get political. Jobs reports are bad. Inflation's rising. No major bills seem poised for passage from the Joey administration. So let's rehash the panic over Delta to keep the nation's attention away from a presidency that is rather brain dead. Interesting commentary by Matt Vespa over Town Hall. You know, we face more than interesting times in this nation. Supreme Court Justice Louis D. Brandeis once said, experience teaches us to be most on our guard to protect liberty when the government's purposes are beneficent. As we all know, a federal COVID-19 vaccination strike force may soon be knocking on our door, especially if you live in a community with low vaccination rates. Will you let them in? I think of the words of Little Richard, I hear you knocking, but you can't come in. More to the point, I guess, is, are we required to open the door? The Biden administration has announced that it plans to send federal surge response teams on a targeted community door-to-door outreach to communities with low vaccination rates in order to promote the safety and accessibility of the COVID-19 vaccines. Well, I guess that's all fine and good as far as government propaganda goes, but nothing is ever as simple or as straightforward as the government claims, especially not when armed. Roving bands of militarized agents deployed by the nanny state show up at your door with an agenda that is at odds with what Supreme Court Justice Brandeis referred to as the constitutional right to be let alone. Any attempt by the government to encroach upon the citizenry's privacy rights or establish a system by which the populace can be targeted, attracted, and singled out must be met with extreme caution. Because these door-to-door visits by COVID-19 surge response teams certainly qualify as a government program whose purpose, while seemingly benign to some, should be raising significant constitutional concerns. So we're going to address the visit first. Okay. While government agents can approach and speak to and even question citizens without violating the Fourth Amendment, Americans do have a right not to answer questions or even speak with a government agent. Courts have upheld these knock-and-talk visits as lawful, reasoning that even though the curtilage of the home is protected by the Fourth Amendment, there is an implied license to approach a residence, knocking on the door, ringing the bell, and to seek to contact occupants. However, the encounter is wholly voluntary, and a person is under no obligation to speak with the government agent in that situation. So indeed, you don't even need to answer nor open the door in response to knocking or ringing by a government agent. And if you do answer the knock, you can stop speaking at any time. You also have the right to demand that government agents leave the property once the purpose of the visit is established. Government officials would not be enforcing any law or warrant in this context, and so They don't have the authority of law to remain on the property after a homeowner or resident specifically revokes said implied license to come onto the property. As I shared with you the other night, I've got a no trespassing sign. Bright, bold, golden yellow with black printing on it. And it's on our front door right now. It's that simple. I don't need to speak. The sign speaketh for me. So when our government's actions go beyond merely approaching the door and knocking, it risks violating the Fourth Amendment, which requires a warrant and probable cause of possible wrongdoing in order to search our property. A government agent would violate the Fourth Amendment if he snooped around the premises, peering into windows and going to other areas in search of residents. And so it needs to be pointed out that some judges, including Supreme Court Justice Gorsuch, believe that placing no trespassing signs or taking other steps to impede access to the door is sufficient to negate any implied permission for government agents or others to approach your home. But that particular view, interestingly enough, does not have general acceptance. But it hangeth on my door anyway. So while in theory we can refuse to speak with police or other government officials during a knock-and-talk encounter, as the courts have asserted as a justification for dismissing complaints about this police investigative tactic, the reality, in fact, is far different. It is unreasonable to suggest that individuals caught unaware by these tactics will not feel pressured in the heat of the moment to comply with a request to speak with government agents who display official credentials and are often heavily armed, let alone allow them to search one's property. That even when such consent is denied, police have been known to simply handcuff the homeowner and conduct a search over his objections. So it's not as simple as one would believe. Secondly, there is the danger inherent in these knock-and-talk encounters. For although courts have embraced the fiction that knock-and-talks are voluntary encounters that are no different from other door-to-door canvassing, these constitutionally dubious tactics are highly intimidating confrontations meant to pressure individuals into allowing police access to one's home, which then paves the way for a warrantless search of one's home and property. And the act of going to homes and taking steps to speak with occupants is akin to the knock-and-talk tactic used by police, which can be fraught with danger for homeowners and government agents alike. Oh, indeed, my friends, the knock-knock-knock-talk-talk-talk policing has become a thinly veiled, warrantless exercise by which citizens are coerced and intimidated into talking with heavily armed police who knock on their doors in the middle of the night. Knock-and-shoot policing might be more accurate, however. But knock-and-talks not only constitute severe violations of the privacy and the security of the homeowners, but the combination of aggression and surprise employed by police is also a recipe for a violent confrontation that rarely ends well for those on the receiving end of the tactics. Let me give you an example. 26-year-old Andrew Scott. Man had committed no crime, never fired a single bullet or threatened police, but he was gunned down police who knocked aggressively on the wrong door at 1:30 in the morning, failed to identify themselves in police, and then repeatedly shot and killed Scott when he answered the door while holding a gun in self-defense. Well, the police were investigating a speeding incident by engaging in a middle-of-the-night knock-and-talk in Scott's apartment complex. Another example, Carl Dykes shot in the face by a county deputy who pounded on Dykes' door in the middle of the night without identifying himself. And because of reports that inmates had escaped from a local jail, Dykes brought a shotgun with him when he answered the door. And as these and other incidents make clear, while Americans have a constitutional right to question the legality of a police action or resist an unlawful police order, doing so can often get one arrested or shot. or killed. Thirdly, there's the question of how the government plans to use the information it obtains during these knock-and-talk visits. Because the stated purpose of the program is to promote vaccination. Homeowners and others who reside at the residence will certainly be asked if they're vaccinated. But again, you have a right not to answer this or any other question. Indeed, an argument could be made that even asking the question is improper if the purpose of the program is merely to ensure that Americans, quote, have the information they need on how both safe and accessible the vaccine is, end of quote. Well, hell, we all know it's accessible. The question comes to safety. But under the Privacy Act, 5 U.S. Code 552A, an agency should only collect and maintain information about an individual as is relevant and necessary to accomplish a purpose of the agency. My question, of course, is, what is their purpose? But in this situation, the government agent could accomplish the purpose of assuring persons have information about the vaccine simply by providing that information, either in writing or orally, and would not need to know the vaccination status of the residents. And to the extent the agents do request, collect, and store information about residents' vaccine status, that in fact could be a Privacy Act violation. Of course, there's always the danger that this program could be used for other more nefarious purposes not related to vaccination encouragement. And as with the knock-and-talk policing, government agents might misuse their appearance of authority to gain entrance to a residence, obtain other information about it and those who live there. Understand, my friends, once the door is opened by a resident, anything the agents can see from their vantage point can be reported to law enforcement authorities. And moreover, while presumably the targeting will be of areas with demonstrated low vax rates, there's no guarantee this program would not be used as cover for conducting surveillance on areas deemed to be high crime areas. All as a way, of course, of obtaining intelligence for law enforcement purposes. Isn't it exciting? You know, we've all been down this road before. Government sending its spies to gather intelligence on American citizens by questioning them directly or by asking their neighbors to snitch on them. Remember the egregiously invasive and intrusive American Community Survey? Unlike the traditional census, which connects data every 10 years, the American Community Survey, or ACS, is sent to about 3 million homes per year at a reported cost of hundreds of millions of dollars. And moreover, while the traditional census is limited to ascertaining the number of persons living in each dwelling, their ages, their ethnicities, the ownership of the dwelling, the phone numbers, etc., etc., the ACS is much more intrusive. They begin to ask questions relating to respondents' bathing habits, their home utility costs, fertility, marital history, their work commute, their mortgage, health insurance, among other very highly personal and private matters, which is none yo effing business, baby. So individuals who receive the ACS must complete it, or get this, be subject to monetary penalties. And although no reports have surfaced of individuals actually being penalized for refusing to answer the survey, the potential fines that can be levied for refusing to participate in the ACS are staggering. For every question not answered, there's a $100 fine. And for every intentionally false response to a question, the fine is $500. And so, therefore, if a person representing a two-person household refused to fill out any questions or simply answered nonsensically, the total fines could range from between $10,000 and $50,000 for noncompliance. 28 pages, with an additional 16-page instruction packet The ACS contains some of the most detailed and intrusive questions ever put forth in a census questionnaire. In these concern matters that the government simply has no business knowing, including questions relating to respondents' bathing habits, our home utility costs, fertility, marital history, work commute, mortgage, health insurance, among others. For instance, the ACS asks how many people live in your home, along with their names, detailed information about them, like their relationship to us, their marital status, their race, their physical, mental, emotional problems, etc. But the survey also asks how many bedrooms and bathrooms you have in your home, along with the fuel used to heat your home, the cost of electricity, what type of mortgage you have, and monthly mortgage payments, property taxes, so on and so forth. Ah, my friends, but that's not the end of it. While some of the ACS questions may seem fairly routine, the real danger is not knowing why the information is needed, how it will be used by the government, or with whom it will be shared. And you begin to think, what kind of questions are they going to attempt to ask me, you know, with this knock and speak mentality, trying to peddle me the benefits of getting a vaccine? Well, we do have the right to say no. Whether the police are knocking on your door at 2 a.m. or 2:30 p.m., as long as you're being asked to talk to a police officer who is armed to the teeth and inclined to kill at the least provocation, you ain't really got a lot of room to resist. Not if you value your life. Mind you, these knock-and-talk searches are little more than police fishing expeditions carried out without a warrant. The goal, my friends, is intimidation. It is coercion. But unfortunately, with police departments increasingly shifting towards pre-crime policing and relying on dubious threat assessments, behavioral sensing warnings, flagged words, and suspicious activity reports aimed at snaring potential enemies of the state, we're going to see more of these warrantless knock-and-talk police tactics by which police attempt to circumvent the Fourth Amendment's warrant requirement, prohibition on unreasonable searches and seizures. And so here's the bottom line. These agents of Joey are coming to your home with one purpose in mind: to collect information on you. It's a form of intimidation, of course. You shouldn't answer any questions you're uncomfortable answering about your vaccine history or anything else. The more information you give them, the more it can be used against you. Just ask them politely but firmly to leave. In this case, as in so many interactions with government agents, the First, the Fourth, the Fifth Amendments, and don't forget your cell phone recording the encounter, are your best protections. Under the First Amendment, you don't have to speak to government officials or anyone else. The Fourth Amendment protects you against unreasonable searches and seizures by the government. And under the Fifth Amendment, you got the right to remain silent and not say a damn thing which might be used against you. Yeah, you can also post the no trespassing sign on your property to firmly announce that you are exercising your right to be left alone. And if you see government officials wandering around your property and peering through the windows, in my opinion, you've got a violation of the Fourth Amendment. Government officials can ring the doorbell, but once you put them on notice that it's time for them to leave, they cannot stay on your property. And it's important to be as clear as possible and inform them that you will call the police if they do not leave. You may also wish to record your encounter with a government agent. And if they still don't leave, immediately call the police and report a trespasser on your property. We all have to remember, my friends, we still have rights, I think. Of course, the government didn't want us to know about, let alone assert, those rights during this whole COVID-19 business. And after all, for years now, the powers that be, you know, those politicians and bureau rats who
think like tyrants and act like petty dictators, regardless of what party they belong to. They've attempted to brainwash us into believing that we have no right to think for ourselves, make decisions about our own health, protect our homes and families and business, act in our own best interests, demand accountability and transparency from government, or generally operate as if we are in control of our own lives. But we've got every right. And do you know why? Because as the Declaration of Independence states, we are endowed by our Creator with certain inalienable rights to life, liberty, property, and the pursuit of happiness that no government can take away from us. But unfortunately, that has not stopped the government from constantly trying to usurp our freedoms at every single turn. Because indeed, the nature of our government today is such that it invariably oversteps its limits, abuses its authority, flexes its totalitarian muscles. And the COVID-19 crisis is the perfect example. For what began as an apparent effort to prevent a novel coronavirus from sickening the nation and the world has become yet another means by which world governments, including our own, can expand their powers, abuse their authority, and further oppress their constituents. And this government has made no secret of its plans. Just follow the money trail. You'll get a sense of what's in store. More militarized police, more SWAT team raids, more surveillance, more lockdowns, more strong-arm tactics aimed at suppressing dissent and forcing us to comply with the government's dictates. It's pretty damn chilling to think about, but it's not surprising. And you wonder why, when I get off the air, after having to put this emotion into sharing these kind of comments with you, that there's nights I'm wiped out. I'm done. But keep in mind that in many ways, this COVID-19 so-called state of emergency has invested government officials and those who view their lives as more valuable than ours with a sanctimonious, self-righteous, arrogant, big brother knows best approach to top-down governing, and the fallout can be seen far and wide. Now, my friends, it's an ugly, self-serving mindset that views the needs, the lives, and the rights of we, the people, as insignificant when compared to those in power. And that's how someone who should know better, someone like Alan Dershowitz, former Howard Law professor, can suggest that a free people, born in freedom, endowed by the Creator with inalienable rights, and living in a country birthed out of revolutionary struggle for individual liberty, have no rights to economic freedom, to bodily integrity, or to refuse to comply with the government order with which they disagree. Mr. Dershowitz has become nothing more than a legal apologist for the power elite. You have no right not to be vaccinated, he said. You have no right not to wear a mask. You have no right to open up your business. And if you refuse to be vaccinated, the state has the power to literally take you to a doctor's office and plunge a needle into your arm. Dershowitz is wrong. But while the courts may increasingly defer to the government's brand of nanny state authoritarianism, we still have rights. The government may try to abridge those rights. It may refuse to recognize them. It might even attempt to declare martial law and nullify them, but it cannot litigate, legislate, or forcefully eradicate them out of existence. Commentary by John W. Whitehead, one of the finest writers out there. I'm proud to have the ability to share. I had to take a quick run through. Michael, you still with me? Let's go ahead and run a break. Oddball time, but let's go ahead and do it. I need a quick break, and then we'll conclude afterwards, okay? All right. I'm having a side conversation with Michael here. Because I said, let's not do a break, but We're going to do a short one here, and I'll be back with you, I hope. I think I threw him.
Homeowners, if your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you, and your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects. Please call 855-253-3748. 855-2 keep it today.
I want the truth! You can't handle the truth!
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Real news, real talk, real people. Because you can handle the truth.
Have you been looking for a trusted, long-term, storable food company? We have a solution for you. Simply Clean Foods is dedicated to providing the best quality food you can buy next to fresh from a farmer's market. Our line of resealable fruits, vegetables, and meats are suitable for everyday use, and you won't have to worry about throwing away valuable groceries ever again. Our food is completely GMO-free, and our stringent quality controls, plus testing for heavy metals, makes us unique in the storable foods market. Simply Clean Foods' primary focus is to bring clean food to people all around the world and change the way we look at freeze-dried food in our daily cooking. When you purchase from simplycleanfoods.net, not only will you be receiving high-quality food, but you will also be supporting veterans in need across the country and those who are affected by natural disasters. Right now, Amazon Prime members will receive fast 2-day shipping. Go to simplycleanfoods.net. That's simplycleanfoods.net. But do it today.
Now, I know we throw you for a loop by throwing that break in at that particular point in time, but I did not want to interrupt the commentary that I was sharing you from John. It's too important. Before we get to our final warning shot, as it were, warning jab, whatever you want to call it, interesting quote that I was reading just a moment ago. The only thing a government needs to turn people into slaves is fear. If you can find something to scare them, you can make them do anything you want. Hermann Göring, 1945 at the Nuremberg trials. Does that not shock you? It shouldn't. A piece that I came across this morning, which kind of, I've got resources that I've not visited for a long time. And I just decided to start scrolling through them today. And this particular one, I've submitted to my friends, my group that I recently was invited to join on Facebook. Because their argument is combating the COVID jab mandates. And what I came across is about 10, 11 days old, but there's no change in it. It is entitled A Tool for Opposing Employers' COVID Jab Mandates. Section 7, Protections of the National Labor Relations Act. But understand, what I share with you is not intended to provide legal advice. We have to share that, of course. However, it is very much intended to alert employees about a federal law that may enable them to fend off employers' mandates to get the jab or get fired. For employees that are vaccine hesitant or are rational, this federal law is something about which they may want to seek professional advice. Now, rational, meaning that in that something does not pass the smell test. When one begins to consider that, A, we're being subjected to an unprecedented pressure campaign to compel people to take a vaccine that is experimental and authorized only for emergency use, has not been tested for safety and efficacy, and only then approved, as is normally the case with all vaccines. B, these are reasons it doesn't pass the smell test, accompanied by an unprecedented censorship campaign to stifle voices like mine that question that vaccine campaign. C, which vaccine campaign targets even those who've already had the CCP virus and so have natural immunity, and even worse, targets children who are not at risk. D, all supposedly to address a pandemic for a virus with an over 99% recovery rate to begin with. And finally, E, a virus for which there are low-cost, highly effective therapeutic treatments, hydroxychloroquine and ivermectin. You see, my friends, if you don't get it by now, without a doubt, there is an agenda at work here. And it's not public health, and it's not safety. So what might the vaccine-hesitant employees do when confronting employers get the jab or get fired edicts? A long-standing federal law, Section 7 of the National Labor Relations Act, provides certain protections to private sector employees, whether they are in a union or union-free environment. And it is currently still administered through the National Labor Relations Board, which describes those protections thusly. Quote, Section 7 of the National Labor Relations Act guarantees employees the right to self-organize, to form, join, or assist labor organizations, to bargain collectively through representatives of their own choosing, and to engage in other concerted activities for the purposes of collective bargaining or other mutual aid or protection, as well as the right to refrain from any or all such activities, end quote. So, if a group of employees opposing an employer mandate to either take a medically questionable, if not deadly, vaccine or be fired, does not qualify as a concerted activity, that is, for mutual aid or protection, then what is? For the concern is even more compelling at the present time, since the vaccine has not even been approved for safety or efficacy by the FDA, though it would not surprise me if soon this administration bypasses normal testing protocols and, for political, not scientific reasons, issues FDA approval. But there's a lot of reasons why, and the paths forward for employees to pursue Section 7 rights against employer vaccine mandates. Once again, from the National Labor Relations Act. You have the right to act with coworkers to address work-related issues in many ways. Examples include talking with one or more coworkers about your wages and benefits or other working conditions, circulating a petition, asking for better hours, participating in a concerted refusal to work in unsafe conditions, openly talking about your pay and benefits, joining with coworkers to talk directly to your employer, to a government agency, or to the media about problems in your workplace. Your employer cannot discharge, discipline, or threaten you for, or coercively question you about this protected concerted activity. A single employee may also engage in protected concerted activity if he or she is acting on the authority of other employees, bringing group complaints to the employer's attention, trying to induce group action, or seeking to prepare for group action. However, you can lose protection by saying or doing something egregiously offensive or knowingly and maliciously false, or by publicly disparaging your employer's products or services without relating your complaints to any labor controversy, end of quote. So, employers or employees do have resources that provide ammunition for use petitioning their employers. Something called the America's Frontline Doctors or the Children's Health Defense. Let's ponder for a moment this excerpt from the Children's Health Defense document, which is titled Notice for Employers, Universities, and Other Institutions Mandated COVID-19 Vaccines. And it states thusly, all COVID-19 vaccines are merely authorized, not approved nor licensed by the federal government. They are emergency use authorization only. EUA. EUA products are defined by definition experimental and thus require the right to refuse. Under the Nuremberg Code, isn't that interesting? The foundation of ethical medicine, no one may be coerced to participate in a medical experiment. Consent of the individual is absolutely essential. And a federal court held that the U.S. military could not mandate EUA vaccines to soldiers. In Doe No. 1 versus Rumsfeld, 297F Supplement 2D119 back in 2003, the court held that the United States cannot demand that members of the armed forces also serve as guinea pigs for experimental drugs. No court has ever upheld a mandate for an EUA vaccine, my friends. The liability for forced participation in a medical experiment, including injury or death, may be incalculable. Medical and religious exemptions will be insufficient to overcome the illegality of EUA vaccine mandates. And we've got the ability to provide a similar link form from a group called America's Frontline Doctors. There's more and more of these kind of things that I'm providing to this group. I'm giving them every bit of frickin' ammunition they can possibly use to combat their fight. And that includes working at hospitals. We could continue on with this, but you know what? I think you get the point. I think you get the point. If you don't, then you know what? You just don't get it. I'm going to attempt to get these published on Federal Observer. I don't think that I'm going to publish the entire column, but I will get the headline with a brief description posted, and you'll be able to follow the link. I will endeavor to get that up within the hour after getting off the air. Everything that we've covered tonight, including, I hope, the letter that I posted, that I opened the program with tonight. Yes, I will have it. It is too important not to. But we're out of time. Hey, we'll tune in tomorrow night. I'll let it go with that, okay? Take care of yourselves. Thanks. Do you think we have time? These are the days of the open hand. We will not be the last. Look around now, these are the days of the beggars and the choosers. This is the year of the hungry man, whose place is in the past. Hand in hand with the ignorance and legitimate excuses, the rich declare themselves poor, and most of us are not sure.
if we have it too much, but we're taking our chances, say. I sang 20 years and a day, but nothing changed. The human race found some other guy and walked into the flame. It's hard to love, there's so much to hate. Hanging on to hope when there is no hope to speak out. In the wounded skies above, say it's much too late. Then maybe we should all be praying for time. To what you can. And charity, charity is the coat you wear twice a year. Yeah, this is the year of the guilty man. Your television takes a stand, and you find that what was over there is over here. So you scream from behind your door, say what's mine is mine and not yours. I may have too much, but I'll take all my chances, say. I sang it 20 years and a day, there's nothing changed. The human race found some other guy and walked into the flames. It's hard to love, Jesus has so much to hate. Hanging on to hope, there is no hope to speak out. In the wounded skies above, say it's much too late. Then maybe we should all be praying for time.
Hey gang, Patrick Slattery here with an important message that is pertinent to anyone who shops for groceries, eats food, or just has an inquisitive mind like myself. What I'm about to introduce you to is a segment of our food culture that has been kept so low profile to the American public that virtually no one is aware of how dominant it is on our refrigerator and cupboard shelves. What I'm talking about is the kosher certification industry and the new app, Koshertified, that delivers a comprehensive education on all aspects regarding this little-known practice. After reviewing this app, I found that it is useful for practically anyone who purchases food, regardless of their religious faith or identity. Its database of products not kosher certified is a win-win convenience for all food-conscious people. So why not check out thekosherquestion.com or click on the link at nationalbugle.com and see how modifying your grocery shopping with the Koshertified app can make a huge difference for your future.
This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.